There are basic ways to use food to help children learn, focus, and feel better. Jess Sherman's successes working with parents and their children are overriding these demanding times, offering a place where confidence thrives, strategy becomes the co-pilot, tools are in the back seat, and fear is in the trunk. It's a good place to be as a parent, isn't it? Her book is Raising Resilience. I'm Robin. Stay tuned for Tributaries. Jess, a paradigm shift in our health and especially our children's health is demanding a paradigm shift in our health care. And Jess, I'd like to thank you for answering the call. You literally shifted careers, didn't you?
I did, as my own paradigm shifted. Yeah, I shifted careers because I couldn't unlearn what I was learning. So yeah, interesting connection.
Yes. And in this paradigm shift, you write that transition into resilience does require a new way of thinking. How do you see that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the shift that I went through was from education, right, like school teaching, into health teaching, teaching people about their bodies and about their kids' bodies. I was teaching about resilience before I was thinking about it as that word. But that's kind of why I got into education and why when I started working with kids, I was really curious about how kids develop and how we become who we become and what motivates us and why are some kids really intrinsically motivated and others aren't and how do we create environments for kids so that they can figure out who they are and who they want to be. And so that's sort of the thrust, even though I was teaching curriculum and literature, things like that in a fairly non-conventionally conventional way, sort of pushing the boundaries of conventional schooling. But, you know, there was curriculum we had to get through. So in that context, I was trying to help kids really understand who they are and who they wanted to become, which is an aspect of resilience, right? Resilience, I understand as being how we respond to stress, how we grow from stress. When we're put in a stressful situation, how can we learn from that and grow from that? And that's what I was expecting of my students, you know, when we put pressures on them, how do they respond? But then I got tired of teaching and I needed to take a little bit of a break. And so I went back to school to study nutrition. And that's where I kind of got my foundational education in nutrition. And I was really interested in kids. It was a broad spectrum nutrition course, but I was really particularly interested in nutrition for kids and nutrition for the brain and things like that. That's when I learned about all this other aspect of resilience. And my understanding of resilience really shifted.
Jess, what is your perspective when initially discussing stressed out kids? You've discovered that the Prozacs are not the way. Let's look at this from a much broader perspective.
Yeah, well, that's all part of the paradigm shift. I was asking those questions when I was a teacher. It's like, what's stressing these kids out so much, particularly the kids who were having trouble and were not responding well to education? And when I studied nutrition, I started to recognize the impact of nutrients on the stress response, how nutrient imbalances and lack of the right nutrients for the brain really knocks back the nervous system's capacity to cope with stress and throws us really quickly into a threat response, into a stress response. So that was my first, oh, wow, nutrition is really important if we want to be able to manage a stressful situation. And then I got deeper and I was like, wow, there's a lot of things that cause stress on the body that you can't see, but basically fill up your stress bucket. Now I understand it as like, you know, we have a certain stress capacity. And then when we get to the limit of our stress capacity, we lose it, right?
Like yes.
We either lose it in terms of our behavior or our mood, or we actually get a diagnosis of some sort. And so when we identify what's taking up room in the stress bucket, we have a lot more wiggle room. We can experience a stressful situation and have some emotional flexibility in our response to it.
Yes. And when you talk about our stress levels and how our resilience is really minimized at this point in time with the way life is shifting. I just received a book written about Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he was a bit of a spiritual revolutionary himself with quite a profound vision of human potential, and resilience was listed as one of the five traits he recognized, noting that without it, the universe is against you, and in acknowledging the importance of first recognizing the stressors, do you see or have you uncovered some hidden stressors behind the obvious that you share with parents that really can start the ball rolling?
Yeah, well, I think the nutrient deficiency one is so key because, and also it's the problem is compounded by our agricultural practices, right?
Yes.
And the climbing prices of food, right? We really are in this perfect storm. Because that's what people will say. Well, I can't afford the food, or I can't get to the farmer's market, or what have you. And I'm like, okay, maybe true, but it doesn't negate the fact that our body requires the right nutrition in order to function well. So if we're wondering, you know, why are kids spiraling? Why is the suicide rate so high? Why is anxiety starting so young? Why is our healthcare system really struggling under the weight of people needing so much support? That's the smoking gun in my mind. It's like we've got to get the right nutrients into people, and we have to bring access to those nutrients and understand when we grow our food the way we grow our food, the nutrient levels are not as high as they should be. You know,
oftentimes it's just about zero as far as the nutrient density piece of it.
Well, depends on the soil, right? It depends on
right.
the farming practices. So there's a whole conversation about real food versus processed food. So obviously you're going to get more nutrients in real food. But then there's a subtlety there around food that looks like real food, but has been farmed in soil that has no nutrients in it. And it brings up issues of human rights and food access and food security and all kinds of things.
Of course. And I'm happy to hear you bring up that on that first line of defense, these points are very real. Oftentimes, people cannot afford to go spend $80 on one bag of groceries because it's all organic. And honestly, I'm well aware that organic does not mean there's a lot of good nutrient-dense food in that organic because of the soil. Mm-hmm. But staying on topic with you here, you talk about the three core dietary strategies. And I'm wondering if you could just briefly summarize those and or just bring out what you feel is really core about that, knowing even if we can get the best food available in our area, we still may be missing some things.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote about in my book, which came out in 2017. And as I've been working, I've pulled that model even further. The strategies that I write about in my book are to maximize nutrient density and to control blood sugar and to support digestion. And those are still really key and that for parents to understand. And it's funny, you know, I always think my generation of parents, I mean, I'm 50 and my oldest kid is 16. And so people in my generation of parenting, our parents didn't really need to think about this stuff. You know, this is a new parenting toolbox to understand what blood sugar control means, what supporting digestion means, what nutrient density means, because it's now something to contend with. We have so much fake food and we have so much access to poor nutrient void food and things like that. And there are so many things that are affecting our kids' digestion. So this really is kind of new, and sometimes parents will throw up their hands and be like, my grandmother never needed to know all this stuff. Why has stuff become so complicated? And it's because we're living in a different environment. And we're raising kids in a different environment. So those are the core dietary things that I think parents need to understand, the impact of not having enough or the right nutrition in their kids and just doing whatever they can to pack in the nutrition into those little bodies and to keep a handle on the sugar.
Yes.
Yeah.
The new health collective is doing a deep dive into probiotics, for instance, and prebiotics for gut and systemic health. And it's an interesting journey, isn't it? Because every page, there's a website on how to do something, and much of it is a fad and it's going to come and go. And my question about the probiotics and prebiotics to you is that the more of a deep dive they do, there's a probiotic for respiratory conditions or immune situations. And I'm wondering if that's a rabbit hole that's just going to end up getting lost when we have our initial system that we work with. You know, we have a liver that does this and a gallbladder that does that. And I'm just wondering what you're seeing in that whole arena.
Yeah, well, I always work from the premise that the body is really, really intelligent. And we don't give its intelligence enough credit, right? The body knows what to do. It's designed beautifully. And the more I learn about its design, it's the more I'm fascinated by it, which is one of the things I want parents to understand, right? These amazing bodies of their kids. So if we work from that premise, then we have to understand that a symptom means that something is getting in the way of that intelligence. Our bodies are striving to be healthy, and something is derailing that energy. Right? So it's not so much that it's getting in the way. It's more like it's just being derailed. That's what a stressor is. I call it a stressor. Something is stressing out the body, and so it's kind of lost its path towards health. So we have to figure out what those things are. And the thing with probiotics, we now know that the microbiome is a command central. Think of it as like the patrol tower for the airplane. Everything is being regulated in the microbiome by these really, again, intelligent bacteria and viruses and fungi and all of these things that are working together. And we're still really kind of unpacking that. But what's happened is it has become a little bit medicalized because the race is on to you know, find a drug that can mimic what these bacteria are doing or patent probiotic strains so that they can be used in therapeutic senses. So I think that's why there's so much discussion about it, because we've identified how powerful a space the microbiome in the gut is, and the various microbiomes around our bodies, and we have lots of different microbiomes, and everyone's trying to kind of figure out, you know, which strains are most important and how can we identify and pull them apart. What we absolutely know for sure is that diversity in the microbiome leads to better health.
Yes.
It can be as simple as that.
Yes, and I like that you brought that up. And this was something I wanted to ask you. If there is a lack of nutrient density, do you think that having a larger variety of different foods will compensate in some sort of way for that? And I kind of think it will.
Yeah. I mean, we know that these little microbes love fiber and different types of fiber. And we know that all the different foods that you can get fiber in, the fruits and the veggies and grains, and it keeps coming back around to real whole quality foods that were grown from the earth and didn't come from a factory. That's what our microbiome has evolved to want and expect and need. But we keep veering away from that and trying to make things faster and more efficient and cheaper. And our microbes don't think that way. They're like, oh, well, no, the processed version of this is not the same thing. I don't recognize that, so I'm not going to eat it. Yeah, we have done ourselves a little bit of disservice by trying to make things efficient and fast and speed things up and make things cheaper, because our guts are really not responding well to that.
Yes. It is more important to follow the symptoms rather than work on something that has a name as far as diseases are concerned. And I'd love for you to share some of your experience, because although initially psychological problems in children appear to be a problem of their mind or behavior, they do lead back to biological factors. And I know you have a lot of experience with this, and perhaps it was part of why you got started. I'm wondering if you could share an example of what you've seen as far as someone getting help with behavioral or psychological problems.
First of all, what you've just described is what makes me different from a doctor. I'm not a doctor because I don't treat conditions. I don't treat anything. What I do is understand that the body wants to be healthy. And so how can we give the body what it needs, identify what's putting pressure on it and what's stressing it out, what's filling that stress bucket, so that it can be as healthy as possible using food, lifestyle, parenting strategies, the environment of the home, getting outside, getting kids moving, like all of the things that we have evolved as a species to need. So I call those the five core needs for resilient health now. Like, there's things that kids just need. We have evolved to need real food and clean air and clean water and movement and these things. And then there are these pressures and these stressors. There's five of them that I usually look at that get in the way and derail our energy. So I just want to make that distinction that, you know, what I do is not medical. I'm not treating a condition. People come to me with conditions. They've been diagnosed with anxiety or ODD or, you know, whatever it is, ADHD. But I don't care so much about the label. What I care is, okay, let's look at the body and understand where we can support its function. So that's the first thing. Make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And in supporting this, you work a lot with amino acids, and you even have a course that you offer on your website about this type of information. What have you seen? Can you give some specific example?
Yeah. Amino acids are great pressure. I call them pressure valves. They're like natural pressure valves. They're nutrients. So what have I seen? I see a lot of sleep problems with kids. Kids who either can't get to sleep, get hyper before sleep, or can't stay asleep. I had one family who her son was 12 when we started working together, and he hadn't slept a full night in his life, ever. He would always get up. He'd either get up and he'd walk around, or he'd get hungry, or he'd go to mom and dad's room. And we started with some amino acids to help him sleep. We started with 5-HTP and melatonin, and also some nutrients, because one of the things that wakes kids up at night is, it sounds backwards, it sounds unintuitive, but when they don't have enough energy, cellular energy, to get through the night, and they wake up because they're having a stress response, often those kids will be hungry when they wake up. That's what their intelligent body is like, I need fuel, I'm running out of energy. So they initiate a stress response, which wakes them up, and then they're hungry. So anyway, we started with some nutrients to support cellular energy with this kid, and also some amino acids to kind of calm the nervous system. I think of amino acids as they help to bring messages of calm and safety to the nervous system. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the nervous system is always navigating. Is it stress and threat, or is it calm and safety? And that's kind of, it's two, it's two settings. And when kids are highly anxious and they can't sleep, there's more messages of threat than there are calm and safety. And so it keeps the kid really revved up, which again is like, it's what our bodies do to keep us safe. It's totally normal.
It just
also gets in their way. So these amino acids can help bring more messages of calm and safety to the nervous system so it can relax a bit. And then he started sleeping through the night.
And so what is a supplement that you recommend for that situation that's going on when the child wakes up and they're hungry because their cells are wanting nutrients at the time?
Yeah, well, it really depends on the situation, because usually they're hungry during the night because their blood sugar has dropped, and you typically have to back that up to look at what they ate during the day. So if they're eating for good blood sugar support, as I describe in my book, throughout the day, which usually requires much more fiber than the average kid gets, and more protein and more fat, then they can sustain that blood sugar throughout the night a little bit better. But melatonin actually helps blood sugar regulation a little bit throughout the night. And so does a supplement called inositol. It's really easy to give to kids because it's a powder and it tastes pretty good. And it helps stabilize blood sugar, and it also helps calm the racing brain. So for the kids who get really revved up at night, who aren't eating well, and you're having a hard time shifting their diet, and you think they're having blood sugar ups and downs, that can be a good place to start.
Yes, and I really would like to reiterate to our audience, your book, Raising Resilience, does have so much information that's very usable. It's written well and very clearly, so people can get some initial help by reading through and perusing your book. So to give parents a perspective and perhaps a clearer conscience for them, what is your 80-20 concept that you offer as part of your sharing in the book and in your practice? I think it's so important. When my kids were little here in Boulder, we had the dreaded McDonald's trolley where people had their kids' birthday parties, and you were just always dreading that invitation to send your child off to McDonald's for a party.
Yeah, well, the 80-20 that I talk about in the book is really, you've got to find your wiggle room. That's what it's about. You have to figure out how much wiggle room you have, because life is life, right? And not everyone gets this, right? Gets this idea that how much nutrition, blood sugar control, you know, getting the right foods in, managing stress, not everyone understands how important that is. So the 80-20 is just to find that 20% where you can, there's some wiggle room there. And that's totally going to depend on your kid, your lifestyle, your resource, your bandwidth, and also the level of crisis, right? Like if your kid's really in crisis, you have much less wiggle room until you figure out their stressors. And then as we work through understanding, like the process that I bring parents through now, our goal is to really understand their bodies, understand their tendencies, understand their genetics, understand their needs, understand where their wiggle room is and where they have no wiggle room in some cases. So that's what that's about. And I think it's really important to understand parenting and helping kids in the context of reality, you know, because there's all kinds of things we could be doing, should be doing, want to be doing, but don't feel like we can. And that's valid. That's important to consider. And instead of beating ourselves up about it, we just have to rethink where can we do some work? What's the low-hanging fruit that we can tackle to move ourselves in the right direction? And just one step at a time.
Yes, certainly one step at a time. And I would imagine that if a parent would look at this information and apply it to themselves, it could bring a very broad understanding of how much they can actually bring to their child. Because I'm sure mm-hmm. if you tried to do all of it at once or something, it becomes an imposition instead of something that's going to be good and have the body be rewarded by.
Yeah, well, and sometimes when we learn things as parents, we're like, I kind of wish I didn't know that. You know what I mean? Because that sounds really hard. Yeah, and sometimes we'd rather just sort of sit in, I don't want to call it ignorance, but it can be hard. Like mold is a great example of that. Mold is a doozy. If you find mold in your home or mycotoxins in the body, on the one hand, it's an exciting and important piece of information because it's really going to stress out the immune system and it's going to kibosh so many of your efforts. But on the other hand, it's really hard to manage. It's really hard to deal with, especially environmental mold, right? So that's a good example of one of those things that sometimes parents are like, don't even really want to know.
Right.
So we have to be cognizant of that, right?
And, right.
And yeah. So everyone's got a different level of interest and threshold around this stuff.
Yes.
You were asking about like applying it to yourself, and 100%, because everything that I teach, I call this process either the Raising Resilience process or the Resilience Roadmap. It's not new information. It's really more of a paring down of getting rid of the clutter, getting back to the basics of what bodies need. And one of those things is kids really need a sense of safety and connection with the people around them.
Right.
And so all of the stuff that I talk about, if you can't get your kids to do it, but you do it yourself, I mean, we're not that different from our kids in terms of what we need as a human being. Apply it to yourself so that you have more bandwidth, more emotional regulation, more capacity to tolerate things like, oh, hey, we found mold in the basement.
Yeah,
yes. It's not going to throw you into a tailspin. You're going to be like, okay, I've got the energy. I can deal with this because you've taken care of your body. And your kids will see that too because we co-regulate with our kids. So yeah, what you said is absolutely true. We can take care of ourselves and that's going to have a trickle-down effect to our kids.
Yes, and you can appreciate more how that change is going to affect your child and how easy or difficult it might be. And I always feel like the most important things I learned from my parents, nothing was said. The lessons mm-hmm. I really learned from them were things they did and I saw. Which leads me to my final point, that I so appreciate how you acknowledge we need faith, love, and courage as our companions raising children. This is a very intense time. And in saying that, I really want to recognize that every time and every era has its challenges. So I feel like it's myopic to think, oh, this is so much harder now than it was. And then that's a message that gets translated to children. You know, obviously it was wacky with COVID and now we're dealing with basically empty calorie foods and all these things. But I think when we do have the faith and love and courage, that's not the focus. We can focus on the brilliance and miraculous life that we have and be able to move from there is so much more powerful than the other.
Yeah, I think you're right. The folks that I work with are incredibly courageous and very coachable. I mean, this is another piece of it, is that we get so hard on ourselves as parents and feel like we should know what to do. And we should, right. This should be intuitive somehow. And it's very courageous to say, okay, I don't know what I should be doing here, and I'm open to suggestion. And it's not my fault. I just don't know what to do here.
Right, of course. And once we do get a little knowledge, I think the intuition is where the resonance lies, right? You know, we can read so much online or get a coach, and the things that resonate are the things and the directions we should move in.
It's so interesting to me how many emails that I get after people will go through my starter programs to be like, thank you for articulating what I knew to be true, but was surprised by why is nobody talking about this?
Yes.
So it taps into an intuition that parents have. I start from that premise that I talked about, that the body is really intelligent, but also that nourishment should be our guiding light.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we do as parents. If there's anything intuitive about parenting, it's to nourish our kids, whether that nourishment is taking care of them and cuddling them, or it's food-based, or it's talking with them. Like, nourishment comes in a lot of different faces, but that's the headwaters of everything that we do in our community, is you've got to nourish the heck out of these kids and do it with some intention. We have to understand that, like, the nervous system's job is to keep ourselves safe. And when we ask our bodies to change a little bit or integrate a new piece of information or do something in a bit of a different way, our nervous system's like, what? I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure I can do this, right? It's totally normal response, and it's okay. It's our body trying to help us.
You wrote a whole book and have years after the book. Is there something you want to say in closing?
I want parents to feel hopeful. It can feel so extraordinarily hard to parent your kids, especially when they're struggling a little bit. I'm trying to simplify it, and just, I've got my model now, like 5 core needs, 5 core stressors. I talk a lot about those on social media, and just to help parents to simplify, simplify, simplify. And your kids will really respond when you simplify.
Yes.
I'm going by like guiding principles again. Those are 3, just nourish and simplify, connect with your kids, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah, yes. And it's such a brilliant story of how you made your shift. It was really answering a call.
Yeah, I think maybe it was a Steve Jobs thing where you can connect the dots looking backwards. And now I can sort of see how my path ended me up here, just really wanting to help people understand themselves. And as a mom, I just felt so ill-equipped. I didn't understand how to take care of this little being, you know, and
right.
I just dove into it. I was like, all right, I need to understand children's bodies. And it's not our fault that we don't know this stuff. It's just kind of fallen off the plate. Can I share a really quick story of what
Please.
Happened with one of the kids I was working with?
Yes.
Because it was just such an interesting shift in him. He was a teenager, 17, I think. He had a really messed up gut. He was in the toilet for hours, couldn't eat things. He was really frustrated by it. He had a lot of anxiety, too, and emotional stuff going on. But it was this gut piece that was really bothering him. And we ran a stool test to see what's going on in there, and we found all kinds of problems. When I work with older kids, I'll video review the labs for them so that they can understand what's going on in their bodies. And he got so interested in the microbiome and in how the gut bacteria were working. At the same time, got really interested in and learned about restorative agriculture. I think he did one of his final senior projects on regenerative agriculture because he was so interested in the connection of like what's going on in our bodies with these bugs and what's going on in the farms with these bugs. And it really shifted his own paradigm around health and wellness and about food.
Many thanks to Jess Sherman, author of Raising Resilience, for answering the call. For anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you'd hope to find them. If not, please be in touch. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.